Welcome to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers, newbies, and veterans, and everyone in between. We're hosted by M.A. Lee with the assistance of Remy Black and Edie Rooms, all from Writers Inc. Books. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Each episode lasts as long as it takes to fix a quick dinner, grab a short commute, or take a brisk walk. Resources and links are in the show notes. Visit us at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Now, on to this week's episode. Many writers, newbies, early wannabes, flash-ins before they flash out, many of these writers never reach the mature writer's self-analysis stage. They don't learn to seek new methods when the story won't flow, or they don't seek solutions to plot conundrums or character rebellions. They don't analyze their writing blocks and seek ways around or over or under or through that writer's block. Some mature writers don't do this either. They stop and wait. What are they waiting for? Inspiration? The spark of the start of the way out? They should be scaling the problem, or dodging it with another project, or tunneling to discover a deeper issue with a story, or blasting through the block with fire and passion for writing. We don't want to confront writer's block. We shrink away, frightened by its lingering. The great unmentioned unmentionable seeks to rule us. Will we let it? Not if we have sense. Not if we have a juggernaut of ideas barreling into us, desperate to be released into stories. Newbie or mature writer, we do stumble into problems, and then we seek advice from other storytellers. Let's look at advice from another storyteller who is also a story teacher, Kate Wilhelm, who gave us Wilhelm's Law of Ideas, mentioned a few segments back. Wilhelm and her husband Damon Knight have influenced a lot of writers with their 27 years of teaching at the Clarion Writers Workshop. The Clarion Workshop is an intensive 6-week writing program where newbies learn to write and write and write a new story every week. The workshop teaches discipline and persistence alongside craft techniques and process skills. Wilhelm has published more than 30 novels, some award-winning, some adapted for TV and film. Storyteller, story teacher. She's a definite check mark on both sides. How many of us have classified disruptions as writer's block? I know that I have in the past. Looking at a calendar blank of any writing, I've said block, when the actual culprit is too many interferences squeezing writing out of my life. Wilhelm tells us how to overcome these interferences. She relates, one former student told me that one of the most valuable things she took home with her was my advice about time. No one gives it to a new writer, or in many cases, to an established writer. Each and every one of us has to take it, forcibly if necessary, by wile, bribery, any method that works. You have to take the time to weigh it against whatever else is happening, to give it up somewhere else, sacrifice time with other people, time for movies, time for television, fun, games, partying, sleep, or something. There is always some time every day to set aside and declare one's own, but it requires a lot of self-discipline to seize it and keep it. If not every day, then 3 days a week. And if that's still impossible, one day a week. It's hard in the beginning because there is no payback, no tangible reward for all that time spent alone in thought or at a keyboard. And life keeps getting in the way. But it is absolutely necessary to find the time and keep it inviolable and recognize by the private world of the writer that it is not to be invaded. Forcibly taking the time to write, even if we can only carve out one day a week and one session on that one day, that's very important, and Wilhelm is right. Writing is a choice, and we must choose it first. We have our responsibilities, our dutiful obligations, Yet when we've taken care of those, we have to choose writing. As Wilhelm said, you have to take the time to weigh it against whatever else is happening to sacrifice. There is always some time every day to set aside and declare one's own, but it requires a lot of self-discipline to seize it and keep it. What is Wilhelm teaching us here? Three things. One, we make writing a priority, not a priority over our responsibilities and obligations, but a priority over the little bit of free time, or as she says, our own time during the day. Two, we have to plan to write. We know our days. We know the schedule of things we have to do. We have to see the bits of time we can seize for our writing. Three, we have to sacrifice for our writing. Something we dearly love to do. Is that more important than the writing we want to do? I will happily sacrifice a 30-minute vacuuming of dust bunnies to start writing. Can you sacrifice that 30 minutes watching a popular show or scrolling social media? Or that Saturday afternoon gaming? There is a sacrifice we feel great guilt over, and some of us won't give it up. Know what it is and don't compromise. I do quibble with Wilhelm over this. She says, paradoxically and cruelly, the ones you love the most and who love you are the greatest problem. They see that you are suffering, alone, withdrawn, getting nowhere apparently, and they want to relieve you, help you, ease your pain. A movie, a game, a walk or drive, something is offered. And if you say no, feelings get hurt. Guilt arises. You have to decide which guilt to live with. The guilt of denying the companionship or the guilt of yielding and not writing or working at an aspect of writing. Here's my difference with Wilhelm. I will not sacrifice true time with my loved ones. When they know a set writing time is important to you, they will honor it. So we have to wield our time for writing to their schedule. But sweethearts, like spouses and parents, when we communicate, they should want to assist our dream. If they don't, are they toxic? We have different rules for toxic. And the first rule for dealing with toxic people is to box them to minimize their toxicity. But for the rest, when we are truly present, when our companionship is requested, then our writing time should not be begrudged to us. What's another major disruption that causes writer's block? We haven't discussed this one at all. I didn't even think of it. Quelle surprise! Kate Wilhelm brings it up immediately after she dismisses no time as a block causer. It's imposter syndrome. Wilhelm doesn't use that phrase, but it's what she discusses. The great dichotomy for those entering any creative sphere is talent versus craft. The debate goes all the way back to the ancient Greeks, and probably earlier and unrecorded. Plato believed in talent, and talent can't be taught, he said. His student Aristotle believed talent could be taught. The skill may come early and be misidentified as talent, or it must be taught one craft portion at a time. It's like teaching metaphors to ninth graders. Some students easily understand metaphors at the beginning of the years. Others have to be led through simple metaphors to extended, to implied and complex, and on to allegories, which by the end of the year they will understand. Plato said inspired rhetoric cannot be learned. Aristotle said, oh yeah? Here's a list of rhetorical devices in use in this speech you called inspired. Now we can practice these devices. Oh, and 3 years from now, here's a speech you would call inspired by a student who clunked his way before he learned to manipulate the skill of oratory. Here's what Kate Wilhelm says. There are many writers who say emphatically that the answer is no to the question, can writing be taught? For most writers struggling alone, the learning curve from the first attempt to write to becoming an accomplished writer is very long, years in many cases. And all the while they are being taught by rejection slips By trial and error, they're learning what works for them and what doesn't. Even after they have published a few stories, they often can't see why one story was accepted and not another. The answer that we must arrive at is a qualified yes. Some things about writing can be taught. What we could do was teach technique, Wilhelm relates. We believed we could help emerging writers become better writers sooner. And that was their goal at the Clarion Writers Workshop. She continues, as soon as publication is the goal, then technique becomes necessary. The skill of writing can be taught. And as with anything, there's never an end to the skills we can learn and practice and relearn and deepen our understanding of. What does this have to do with imposter syndrome? Well, what is imposter syndrome? Let's use my go-to dictionary, Merriam-Webster. Persistent doubt concerning one's abilities or accomplishments, accompanied by the fear of being exposed as a fraud, despite evidence of one's ongoing success. Let's back our way through that definition. Believing we're a fraud, despite evidence of ongoing success. Wow, that's a heightened form of fear of failure. We have evidence of success. How do we counter that fear? We bolster our evidence. We identify areas in which we think we're weak and learn more about that area than practice what we learn. The definition starts with persistent doubt over abilities and accomplishments. How do we counter doubt? Well, we bolster our abilities by learning more and practicing more. As for doubt over accomplishments, do you think you have an undeserved reward? Did it come too soon? Lucky you. We don't control luck. We have nothing to do with luck. Do you think he fooled everyone? Okay. Do you think everyone is a fool? Surely not. Please check arrogance at the door. You didn't fool anyone. Do you have an accomplishment you worked hard for and therefore earned? It wasn't easy, was it? Maybe you need a reminder of how hard it was, how much learning that you had to do. Look back over your notes. Remind yourself of every step of your process. Imposter syndrome still persisting? What is it you need to feel that, yes, I am a writer? Because that's all we can truly say. We don't rest on our laurels. We have to keep writing. Are you feeling the pressure of putting out a supremely better project? Well, we have two major writers facing this, unspoken by them, much speculated upon by fans waiting for the completion of a series. How can the next book be better than the first books that built such expectations? And each passing year that fans wait only adds more weight to the pressures on these writers to provide that last book in the series. I don't know the answer to this. For me, I felt extreme pressure when I brought a Regency mystery series to its concluding 12th book. It took me a year to write that book. I avoided it by writing other things, nonfiction projects, other fiction projects. But I finally buckled down and wrote it, and it was simultaneously more and less than I anticipated. Maybe that's the heart of imposter syndrome, that what we're doing is more and less than our expectations. But isn't that the way with everything in life, more and less, positive and negative, tangled together? So it is with Wilhelm, both more and less, positive and negative, when she at last comes to writer's block in her book Storyteller. It is not writer's block, it's less. Wilhelm calls it writer's slump. Let's look at what she says. It frequently happens that a writer is stopped temporarily because he or she has reached a plateau and is getting ready for a new phase, a new kind of writing, or tackling a different kind of material. You may find that on the other side of a slump, you're writing very different stories, very likely more complex and deeper than before. She's positive about this rider's slump. On the other side, we're better than before. Our riding is more complex and deeper. She gives several suggestions to work out of this. If you hit a slump and find you're not riding anything, she says, dig out one of your rejected stories and try rewriting it from a different viewpoint. Sometimes changing from third person to first person lets you see that your characters have been plot-driven instead of acting as rational human beings. You could force your hero to dash into the burning building, but in first person, you would not dream of doing such a thing. Or try analyzing the contents by noting in the margin exactly what happens paragraph by paragraph, or do any of the other analytical tricks. It could be that a slump means only that you have been forcing yourself into an unnatural writing rhythm, or you are signaling to yourself that it is time to write something quite different, or there is some other message that you cannot yet decipher and your brain is rebelling, waiting for you to get it. Switching out to a different project, one that is nagging at you because it failed, try a different approach, she suggests. Or awaken the analytical side of your brain by examining paragraph by paragraph what the creative side created. Try something totally different. Let your brain speak to you. And when none of these work, Wilhelm says, if a slump persists and becomes a real block that goes on for weeks or months, there are a few other things you can try to maneuver yourself out of it. She suggests, try rewriting someone else's stories. First, a story you did not particularly like, then one you admired. You could learn something valuable from each. How the one you liked worked, its magic, and why the one you did not like was publishable. Write everything you can think of about the character. What he likes for breakfast, where he went to kindergarten, his first girlfriend, his first love affair, everything. Make a house plan for where he lives and describe the furnishings. You may get so bored, you would rather be writing new material, or you could learn a lot about your characters that you have been missing. Try the plot outline sketch, starting with a what-if situation problem, 1, 2, 3 possible solutions, and then a couple of more. Try combining elements from two of your stories to create a third one. Wilhelm also shares what Gene Wolfe said, that when he got blocked, he would not permit himself to read anything for pleasure or watch television, listen to music, or go to a movie. He denied himself any mental recreation, and the block never lasted more than a few days. She also shared Joe Haldeman, who said about a block, it goes away or you die. And then she quips, I don't know of anyone who ever died of writer's block. These methods may resume your connection with what Wilhelm calls your silent partner, SP for short. You are awakening your muse. Wilhelm says we are two beings, the thinking, verbal person, us in everyday life, and the other part of our psyche, which she describes as forms of communication through images, dreams, impulses, impressions without form, that other part that remains wordless. The SP is like an overworked file clerk scurrying around in your psyche taking care of things, she describes, feeding the right file on call, nudging you to remember an appointment, filling in the blanks of your memory, sometimes belatedly, but more often faithfully, giving you dreams about every 90 minutes throughout sleep, furnishing your daydreams with images, and so on. Then she says, you want to arrive at a good working relationship with that silent partner. For one thing, SP has complete access to your entire database that is made up of everything you have experienced in your whole life, and you will need SP's help more often than you realize. And then, crucially, she says, although SP has found ways to communicate with you, you can never be certain you can communicate to SP. It does not use language or words to communicate with you, and from all indications, it does not comprehend words you direct at it, or at least it does not respond in a meaningful way to your direct orders or pleas expressed in words. It is aware of you and everything you do, instant by instant, but you are never aware of it directly, only of its effects on you. Even if it seems that two-way communication is impossible, with reflection it becomes obvious that it does grasp yes or no, acceptance or rejection. The work of the SP is crucial, but on its own, it is mere fragments, images, the flicker of ideas but not the reality. It is every reverie and fantasy our creative mind has given us, but it cannot speak. For that we need a rational thinking brain. Wilhelm says, your silent partner can give you vivid, powerful, nonverbal material, but it cannot tell you what to do with it, how to use it in stories. It cannot tell you what the sequences and images mean. That takes a conscious, rational mind, and it takes technique and control deliberately applied. You may find that some of the images and fragments are frightening when you examine them closely and accept the meaning you derive from them. Things you would never admit to, desires you have to deny, fears you can't express. But that's what lies at the heart of good fiction. Your readers have the same problems expressing those things, and through fiction, they are afforded the opportunity to experience them indirectly and maintain personal safety. This can be cathartic for writer and reader alike. And Wilhelm continues, to become a successful writer, you must cultivate the partnership between that nonverbal wealth of emotional material and your own consciously applied control of it, and the sooner the better. Without it, your stories will be flat and mechanical, and quite likely they will be trivial and unpublished. With it, when you begin to examine this material and express it through your characters in meaningful ways, your stories will become richer, with much greater depth, and possibly approach the universality that writers strive for. Wow, that's powerful. And that is the writer. Having defeated writer's block by melding together both sides of our minds, working together, devoted to writing, overcoming disruptions, and ignoring doubts and fears, to tell the stories half seen and now fully formed, no longer through a glass darkly, but face to face with story. The right focus turns its lens on every writer's secret monster, writer's block. We say the mantra writer's block doesn't exist, but something more than simple disruptions and distractions can interfere with our writing, creating insurmountable walls. The right focus in the series Defeat Writer's Block analyzes the three most common types of writer's block and offers solutions to overcome and defeat this monster looming over the writer's desk. The best solution, though, is Leo Tolstoy's mantra, no days without lines, nulla dies sine linea. Make that your own mantra. Information for this series comes from host M.A. Lee's guidebook, Think Like a Pro, a new advent for writers, showcasing 7 lessons to change your perspective from hobby writer to pro writer. See the show notes for links. Thanks for listening to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers at all levels, hosted by Emma Lee from Writers Inc. Books, assisted by Remy Black and Edie Runes. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Music is licensed through Audio Jungle, called Background Music Loop. Its creator is Alexander Polishchuk, known on Audio Jungle as Plastic 3. The music comes in different iterations. Show notes and resource links for this and other episodes can be found at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Write to us at winkbooks@aol.com when you have questions, comments, and speculations. We will try to answer you as quickly as possible. By the way, we will not mine your email address. That's rude. If you find value in our content, share with your writing friends or write a review. We're small beans here without the advertising budget of the big peeps, and you can make a difference. And whatever occurs, right on.